And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 24th, 2020. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Dinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, 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 good. Well, I'm happy to say that our friend Nathan Phillips is also doing much better than he was a few weeks ago, huh? Tell me, what's going on with Nathan Phillips recently?
Well, we talked a little bit about his hunger strike to demand three simple things, which I'll mention in a minute. And we talked about that in prior shows. But he has released, he put together a statement to kind of reflect on it and whether he thought.
And just before, hunger strike about what? About the Weymouth compressor, right?
So it was, they're putting in the Weymouth compressor, and he had three demands, which are very baseline expectations. He said, you know, they certainly shouldn't be something requiring a hunger strike because these are clear public health demands. So the first was to properly decontaminate dump trucks that were leaving the site and to test the site thoroughly for asbestos and to install an air quality monitor. Now, as we've talked about before, this Weymouth compressor site is of concern because it's being sited in a place that has a lot of toxic waste buried there, correct? And so he's sort of saying, okay, before we dig up all of this dangerous stuff, we should be, you know, conservative in our actions and make sure we're monitoring to not endanger the community surrounding, including schools and children that are living within the area. And so he did this hunger strike to call attention to these three things that he thinks should just be basic. It should be something that the Department of Environmental Protection does without needing a hunger strike. And while they haven't done those things, he does feel that it's directed, he calls it a spotlight of scrutiny that is now shining bright and intensifying. He feels that he did raise awareness for it. It's calling people's attention to the fact that Governor Charlie Baker is not really doing enough and not really honoring some of his commitments to keeping the pollutants away from people.
And this is as a consequence of his two-week-long hunger strike, right? And you're saying, is that this after all is said and done, he looks and says, yep, I didn't eat anything for 2 weeks, and now there's this more focus on these issues from the governor.
Yep, exactly. So good on him. I don't know how he did it, but let's hope that Baker takes it seriously and starts making some strong actions to get the safety protections in place.
Well, as it happens today, we're recording this on the 19th of February. Today there was a mass protest at the Weymouth compressor site at the Four River Bridge. And during that protest, actually early in the morning, there were some activists found their way into the construction site and had somehow chained themselves to the construction equipment. And so I was there earlier today, and you could see they had various kinds of fire engines and safety people in there trying to get these people cut away from the equipment. But again, it's a similar example to the hunger strike, is that people are putting themselves on the line in a peaceful, nonviolent way to make clear to the powers that be that this compressor is not an acceptable solution, that it's not something that should be happening. And
I think not just the powers of be that be, because they know, right? The powers that be know that there's complaints about this, but really to call attention to the greater population of Massachusetts, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. You, dear listener, to be aware of this and to also take part in saying, you know, we care about this and something needs to be done. If we don't stand up for this, then what happens when it comes to our backyard, you know? Well,
and in fact, it's already come out of the backyard. So the Weymouth compressor site is, I don't know, 2 or 3 acres. It's not a very big site, but that contaminated dirt is being trucked out of the site. It's being dumped, I think, someplace in Taunton. someplace in southern New Hampshire, and someplace west of northwest of Boston. So there are sites where all this stuff is being now transferred to other people, make it somebody else's problem. And you know, this whole construction sets a precedent for other things that are being constructed, which could happen in anyone else's backyard. So it's not sort of a local issue anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of local issues, we talked about one a couple weeks ago that is not so local, the Wet'suwet'en tribe, which is up in British Columbia, native, I don't know what the right word is, First Peoples tribes in the western coast of Canada. At the time, they're protesting a pipeline that's being built through territory that is owned by the tribes. Lots of protests. It appears that those protests have spread across Canada. There are protests basically stopping trains going east and west across Canada. But it's the awareness, at least in Canada and to some extent in the United States, has come up of the injustices being done. So again, it's people taking that kind of direct action that brings these issues to the front. So there you go. There's the update on the on things that are happening in terms of, shall we say, moral statements about climate. One of the other things that has come up over the last few weeks is an idea that a report, basically reporting that there are a convergence of tipping points. So if you have been listening, talking about climate stuff for a while, you probably know what a tipping point is. A tipping point is a physical process that gets out of control, has what's called positive feedback, which is a technical term, right? A self-reinforcing thing. So that when you, when the temperature warms up and the permafrost melts, it lets out more methane, which raises the temperature, which in turn melts more permafrost, which lets more gas out. So it just is this self-reinforcing process. There's a new idea floating around that several of these kind of tipping point processes can reinforce each other and make everything worse faster. I mean, one of the interesting questions that interesting analogies that I've carried around in my head for a long time is about the stability of the climate on Earth. Mariah, let me just describe the stability. That the Earth's climate system is kind of like a rowboat, right? If you're sitting in a rowboat in the middle of a lake, you can rock that rowboat back and forth, and generally speaking, the rowboat settles down. It might bounce back and forth, but if you stop rocking the boat settles back down to its original equilibrium condition. That's sort of what has happened over the last 10,000 years or so. But if you begin to rock the boat so much, and the analogy is rocking the boat by putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to some great extent, finally you make the rowboat tip over. And once the rowboat is flipped over on its belly, there's no easy way back to the original nice condition where you were sitting inside the rowboat warm and dry, rocking it back and forth. So there's this concept that the whole climate can flip precipitously into a new stable state of being flipped upside down and, you know, head down in the water. Those are ideas that are flowing from the idea that three things could work together. You have ice melting in the Antarctic. You have the permafrost melting. And you have the ocean currents that distribute heat around the Earth. All of those are interrelated. So any one of those that goes across the tipping point can cause the other one to cross the tipping point. And all of a sudden, you have a really bad situation. And that's just like one more dire warning that we need to take action on climate, right? I mean, probably it's hard to hear this stuff, but I mean, that's where we are. So Mariah, tell me, speaking of things that are hard to hear, there were two reports that we picked up recently in The Guardian. One was a happy report and one was a not so happy report. Tell me that story.
Yeah, I think the not so happy report sort of is the upside down rowboat, showing us how we have gone too far. We can't get back in the boat. We're soaking wet, and it's just not a happy picture, right? It's, you know, talks about how if you want to go out your front door, Or if you want to open any doors or windows, you have to, it says check your phone, but I feel like, you know, it's visioning as if we were in 2050. Mm-hmm, I feel like by 2050, we won't have phones. We'll have like implants in our head or something.
This is in the Guardian, right? A piece in the Guardian.
So it's pretending that we were in 2050, and it's notably written by Christiana Figueres, who was, she's a Costa Rican diplomat. And she was the executive secretary of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which was the when the Paris Climate Agreement formulated. So she's a co-author for this, both of these sort of visioning articles from 2050. And, you know, the one that's the worst case scenario, it's really hard to read. It talks about how the permafrost melted and it released all of these, sort of bacteria and problem kind of disease
bugs.
Vectors. Yeah. Ancient microbes that today's humans have never been exposed to. And so now we don't have any resistance. So we're getting, you know, the diseases are being spread rampantly by mosquitoes and ticks. And, it's 140 degrees out, all of these awful things, right? You know, you read it and you're just like, oh gosh, I do not want to keep reading this. This is like a little horror movie. And then you read the best case scenario in 2050 and it's like, trees have been planted everywhere. And
The air is fresh.
Air is fresh. We vanquished carbon emissions. We restructured and reimagined cities and, focused on net zero emissions and 100% electricity and all of these other things. So it's a much rosier picture. And I think it's interesting to read the two of them. And sometimes visioning can be important to, and sometimes you need that little shock of the worst case scenario compared with the best case scenario to kind of remind you of which one you want.
Well, and I think it's important to keep in mind that we are making choices, right? Even though the choices are sort of distant and hard to, always imagine, the fact is, by not deciding, you're deciding, kind of thing, right? We are doing things that will have consequence, and the more that we think about them and try and envision the positive outcomes, the better off we are. You're right to say that the negative snippet, I think it's some, the title was something like, "It all." The only question is how long we last, right? Depressing, but what we want to do is focus on the positive one. So there's that. So I got one other question for you, Mariah. Did you watch the Oscars?
I didn't, but I know where you're going with Parasite, right? Which is one best picture.
Yeah,
and who knew that it had a climate change connection?
That's right. My wife and I made the effort to go see several of the Oscar movies. We saw the Living in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles movie, which if you haven't seen it, is an interesting movie. No doubt is an interesting movie. We saw the one about Knives Out, which was actually filmed here in Boston. It's quite entertaining movie. But
it's
one of the films,
fun.
Oh, and the Little Women, of course, was just really good, really good movie. So there's lots and lots of questions about who should have been nominated and who shouldn't have been nominated. But this movie called Parasite won the whole shoot match. It won the best picture. And so I guess, Mariah, let me do it. If we do not want to make any spoilers, we're not going to give away the plot or say anything in particular. But if you want to see Parasite and you haven't, you're planning and you want to keep it a secret, now would be a good time to hit the pause button because come back next week. Right? We'll chat a little bit about this.
Come back after you've seen it.
Come back after you've seen it. But even then, we're not going to give away much of the movie, except to talk about the fact that this is a Korean movie set in Korea. It's all in Korean language with English subtitles. But it does have a climate connection. So, Mariah, let me put you on the spot. Tell me, what's your take on what the climate connection is, and then I'll correct you if I think you've said it incorrectly.
I think that there's a lot going here on, of course, in this movie, and the climate piece is a very small subtext of the movie, but it's poignant nonetheless, and made more so by the fact that this movie became an Oscar winner for Best Picture. I think it's the first time that climate has had such a big stage in an Oscar best picture, Oscar-winning best picture. Mm-hmm. Of course, there have been other climate movies, right? A Day After Tomorrow or Inconvenient Truth. Although Inconvenient Truth may have gotten, it didn't get best picture.
Yeah, it got something.
I think it got some awards. Yeah. Awards, but of course, it's more about sort of the struggles, economic disparities in life. That's a bigger part of it. But what you do see, the most notable piece, is when a big rainstorm just comes in and hammers this area where it's filmed, and the very wealthy family has to cancel their camping trip, and the son's birthday party is kind of ruined. But the family who's helping them, that is not so wealthy, they live in this sort of sub-basement apartment, and their apartment gets completely flooded with sewage water. I mean, it's there's no way they can live in that for a long time to come, right? Mm-hmm. If at all. And that's this sort of little tip, this little nod to the, you know, not one all-consuming cataclysmic event, but these little things just are going to slowly eat away at our livelihood, and how differently they will affect us depending on our station in life.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, as you say, I think you've got it pretty, as always, you've got it correct. I mean, this movie is not a climate movie, but climate issues are woven into the backdrop as just part of life, right? And it's all about class and who's got the money and who doesn't have the money, and the incredibly disparate impact which is not even really mentioned. It's just like one more thing that happens in the movie, right? But the poor family just gets hammered and ends up in, you know, sleeping in the local gym that night because of and life just continues, and that's kind of the way climate change is going to get to us, right? It's not going to be the front and center, oh my god, climate change has come. It's just going to be these terrible inequities happen and everybody keeps marching along.
Yeah, and interesting to note, the director Jun Hu, I hope I'm saying that correctly, also directed Snowpiercer. So that was a sci-fi action movie that was set in a world that couldn't stop climate change. And so everyone that was left in humanity was forced onto a train. and so he's been down this road before.
Clearly the guy's thinking about it. And I guess I'd reemphasize the fact that this little climate aspect of the movie is not the central focus of the movie. I mean, the way the thing ends is entirely different from this rainstorm thing is just one ongoing scene in what otherwise is this train wreck that you can't take your eyes off. I mean, I can see why it won first.
It's the prize. It's a really compelling movie. Articulated movie. Quite good.
So I would say, if you get a chance, go see Parasite. I mean, I originally thought Parasite, I thought it was going to be about, like, diseases and stuff, right? You know, a scary movie about a bug, like the coronavirus, right, kind of thing. Mm. But it's not that at all. It's a very interesting movie. All right, well, Mariah, you and I are wonderful movie critics. Maybe we can get a second job reviewing movies. But we'll put everything down there. I'll tell you what, we'll put up links to what we talked about at the website. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Tell us what you thought of the Parasite movie. You can listen to us on any of the modern podcast distribution apps. We want to thank D.R. Tucker for his research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of those things, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.